It's time I'd like to call this meeting to order. I'll let the record reflect, the time is 11:05. The day is Thursday, February 3rd, 2005. But our clerk, Ellen, please call the roll.
Representative Wilson?
Present.
Representative Gatto?
Here.
Representative Lynn?
Here.
Representative Thomas?
Here.
Representative Guerra is absent. Representative Salmon is absent. Chair Newman?
I'm here, and I understand Representative Salmon will be joining us shortly. Let the record reflect, we have a quorum. Today, we're going to be taking up the following legislation, HB 20 from Representative Seaton on education funding, and HB 13, school construction bond reimbursement from Representatives Gatto and Grunberg. It is my intent to hold both these bills over today. Also, I want to remind members of this committee that the Commissioner of Education will be here on February 3rd. That's Thursday, where he's going to be here to speak to the committee, and he's going to address education in Alaska in general. So I have no doubt we'll all have questions for him on that, and maybe we'll have some questions concerning this also. Also, if anybody's cell phones, remind everybody that cell phones off, and noises on the table are also heard. We'll begin today by welcoming Representative Seaton, inviting him to come up and present HB 20.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. I am Representative Paul Seaton, and HB 20 is the purpose of this is to address a problem that we have all seen in our districts across the state, and that is that we run through a process where we don't get our education budget out until late in the year, and the school districts are forced to put pink slips out to many of their teachers and then attempt to rehire them later. This is very disruptive and demoralizing to teachers, and so the HB 20 attempts to address this by requiring the governor to submit the budget, education budget, separately by the fourth day of the session, and then have the legislature approve that budget by March 15th of each year. And sponsor substitute for HB 20 changed that date to March 15th of the year instead of April 1st. And because the notification period for teachers is set at March 16th. And so to provide a 10-day window for the legislature to act and then for the governor to approve, Section 2 of the bill moves the date by which tenured teachers have to be notified to March 25th. The bill provides for the separate funding of the foundation formula. We would anticipate that there would probably be a move by the legislature to also address the other portions of K-12 education, such as pupil transportation, at the same time. So that's the intent of the bill, is to get early funding of education. The bill does not address a dollar amount, just means that the process we go through will every year will get early funding done so that the districts will know how much money they have and whether they have to terminate any teachers and then try and rehire people later. The sponsor statement goes through most of those things, and you'll notice there's a zero fiscal note attached. You have in your packet letters of support from the Kenai Peninsula Borough. You have a letter of support of the idea from NEA, although they had a problem with the date of moving the March 16th date. You also have just had added at your desk a letter of support for this from the Lower Kuskokwim District, and there's also a letter of support from an individual teacher. And it's a fairly simple bill. The concept is something that I think that we need to get forward so that our school districts throughout the state have a better working relationships within the teacher community, and that we don't unnecessarily burden them with disruptive practices. And so I'd entertain any questions that you had.
Representative Gatto.
Thank you.
Also, may the record show Representative Salmon is present.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You mentioned some school districts that sent letters of support. Did you get letters opposing this from some school districts also?
Representative Gatto, through the chair, no, we did not receive any letters from school districts opposing this.
And follow.
Representative Gatto.
How about the professional teachers organizations, their support or opposition?
Through the chair, Representative Gatto, we have a letter from NEA in your packet that supports the concept. Like I said, they did have a problem with moving the date, the mandatory date for notifying tenured teachers from the 16th to the 25th. They supported sections 1 and 3, which is the essence of the bill, is moving the date in which the governor moves up his submission to the budget and the legislature's submission back to him. And there's also a let me get the name. It's, we have a, Cindy Spanners from APEA, American Federation of Teachers, is here to testify on the bill. So we have the two professional organizations have indicated that early funding would be beneficial.
Thank you.
Are we on number 13?
This is HB 20.
Oh, okay.
Yes, Representative Seaton. Bill similar to this last year, HB 19. Bills similar to this have been put forth quite a bit in recent history. What has been their major obstacle in moving forward in here?
Mr. Chairman, one of the problems was the date was April 1st, or in fact, it's been April 15th in the past, and that really didn't cure the problem of the statutory requirement for districts to notify their teachers that they wouldn't be rehired. And so this bill moves forward that date to, as we have in here, March 15th. So, and then moves back the date of the teacher notification 10 days to give a 10-day window. So what this does is gets us forward to that so that districts wouldn't have to get into this crunch of notifying their employees of termination.
Representative Peggy Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Seaton, do you know, I don't know the background of why we discriminate between the tenured teachers and the non-tenured teachers when we notify them. Do you know what the original reason was that there's a difference between those two, and when we can notify one group, but the other group can be left till the end of the school year? Do you know where that thought came into being?
No, I don't, Representative Wilson, through the chair. Of course, the thing is that tenured teachers have certain rights and privileges that are established, whereas non-tenured teachers are hired on a year-to-year basis until they become tenured. But perhaps the Eddie Jeans or somebody from the department who's here to testify could give you a better reading on that.
Follow up on that.
Right.
And the reason I would like to comment on that is because I think that it, you're a teacher and you would like to have a job for the next year, and you'd like to know as soon as possible, and what you have to go through to look to another place or apply for other jobs is the same whether you're a tenured teacher or a non-tenured teacher. So I'm just wondering about that. I'm concerned about that because it doesn't matter what kind of teacher you are, you still would have that same concern. So
And through the chair, Representative Wilson, that's my concern as well. And I think the practice of the districts is that they have used this date for notifying non-tenured teachers. Very seldom are there tenured teachers that are laid off, but not knowing what their budget is, they use this statutory date for tenured teachers as the date by which they want to notify their non-tenured teachers. And of course, those are new teachers who are in flux, and that's one of the biggest problems is they notify all the non-tenured teachers that you may not be hired, and that causes this, you know, severe disruption among the, you know, personnel not knowing whether they should be applying elsewhere or getting hired. You know, often our best teachers say, I don't want to live in this situation of not knowing whether I'll be hired next year or having been told that I may not be hired next year. And so then they leave. And that's the entire situation that we're trying to cure. But you are correct in that they are not identified in the statute as having to be notified. But I think that that's been basically the procedure. And maybe I believe we have at least one person from a school district to testify, and they could tell you what the school districts have been actually doing with that provision.
One more, Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just wanted to be on the record that there are school systems, because of the decreased funding that, of schools, and they've had to cut back. And I know of at least four school systems that have had to go to the point where they didn't have any non-tenured teachers left, and there was nothing but tenured teachers. So I just want that on the record that it is happening in Alaska, and we just need to be aware of it.
Also, for the record, we have been joined by Representative Guerra. Do we have any questions?
I'll just weigh in line. Yep.
Yeah.
Okay, Representative Lynn.
I just want to put on the record, I'll just underline what Representative Wilson said. Those are my concerns, too. She stole my thunder. But we both need to thunder on this. I'm very concerned about it.
Representative Guerra.
Thank you, through the chair, and thanks to Representative Seaton. It's a very important issue. And you probably addressed this before I came in. So just deal with it briefly if you did. There seems to be always a tension in this body between early funding and adequate funding, right? It seems somehow the forces during the legislative session somehow get to the point where we can get a better school budget later in the session for whatever reason than we can in the beginning, but we have the tension because we don't want the school districts to send out the pink slips, so we also want to get it to them early, and the challenge has always been to try and find a way to get them both. And why is it why can't we just change the statutory date for when school districts have to submit funding to their municipal governments, which seems to be driving the early pink slips? So right now we're saying you've got to have your budget ready for your municipality by May 1st or something like that. Why don't we just say it's June 1st and avoid the pink slip problem, tell them, look, we're doing our best here, but we need time to get the momentum going to get the best school budget we can in Juneau. So we're going to ask you to move your date by a month, because our legislative dates can't change. They have to start in January. They have to end in May. Why can't we do it that way?
Well, through the chair, Representative Guerra, yeah, I don't think that the May 1st problem is driving the teacher layoffs. The teacher notifications are going out in March, and it would be a disservice to teachers to wait until after all the job fairs and things that go in the middle of April, and then notify them after they've lost their opportunity to get hired in other places and say, now you don't have a job because we do our budget that way. The intention here is to move the process forward, to segregate out the budget, because I believe, and I think it's been demonstrated, that the highest priority of the legislature is education funding and our kids, and separating that budget and having it done early, I don't think will be a detriment to adequate funding of education. But rolling back the budget and just saying that school boards don't have to tell the boroughs their budget until July, and then holding off notification of teachers until June when they've lost the opportunity for hires in other places, I think would be the opposite of what we want to do. We want to roll forward so that we, if people have to be laid off, they have the best window of opportunity to get the best job possible, which is through the job fairs and other mechanisms that they use for getting hired on other jobs if we are going to have to terminate. So that's the purpose of moving the budget forward, is so that then we can tell them in time, so that if they have to lay off anybody, those people that are laid off have adequate notice. So we're not trying to take away adequate notice, we're trying to build in adequate.
We have been joined by Representative Kapsner. If she'd like to join us at the front, she's more than welcome.
Mr. Chair, can I ask a follow-up?
Did she leave the room? Okay. Representative Guerra?
Yeah. Let me keep thinking this through, because you're right. What I propose maybe doesn't solve the problem. But I'm just thinking out loud. If the drop dead date is we have to have our budget by March 15th, I'm just using this year as an example. There's the governor's budget. We still haven't heard, even though he introduced his budget, previewed it in November or so, we still haven't heard from all the school districts who are still doing their calculations on how they fare under the governor's budget. We're starting to hear that a number of them maybe need extra funds to hold even to last year. So in the education committee, we still haven't heard from the local school districts. We're starting to. And then it hasn't gone to HESS yet. And for it to get from the education committee through HESS, through the House, and through the Senate, and then for the school districts to be able to put enough pressure on the legislature to up the funding, if they're going to succeed at that, to reflect their true needs, can we really do that by March 15th? And then let me just offer you another question, and then I'll hear the answers. But would we not give the school districts the guarantees they need? And I know you've proposed this in the past. Would we not give the school districts the guarantees of what money they're going to get next year by saying, putting in law that will cover their PERS-TERS and inflation-proof every year? And so if we had a law that said inflation-proofing and PERS-TERS every year, even though the budget won't have passed yet, they would that be a way for them to know what they're getting the next year? It's those two questions about, can we really do it by March 15th, and then...
First, I would like to mention to Representative Guerra that we will be hearing from quite a few of the other school districts later on and the administration on this point. Mm-hmm. So if there's anything else that Representative Seaton can add to that, feel free.
Well, I guess I would just say that, you know, basically you're binding every other legislature somehow by statute, unless you want to do it by constitutional amendment, saying that you're going to cover all the retirement costs and do inflation proofing or something. Is that's another issue. And I think that would be very difficult to do. I also, you know, think that we need to deal with the individual needs of district based on what those needs are. And I would be worried that if we say, okay, inflation proofing and PERS and TERS is enough, and we make that deal, that may be all we're going to see, and the education needs may be more than that. And so I think that those things need to be brought out every year for the needs of the districts and for the needs of the education system of that year. And if the districts are going to have to come forward with their proposals earlier because, you know, we have early funding, I think that they will do that. I mean, if they don't expect a budget until May, they're not going to be here in, you know, February. And so I think that if they know that the education budget is separated out and it goes forward as a separate budget, and we don't have to worry about wars between the two bodies based on additional items and capital budget items put in, and whether you know that's what's happened in the past, where we had early funding in the House last year, but we had some bulldozers and other things in that same bill, and that's what stopped early funding, in my opinion, last time, is because we had a fight on the other segments. And so the whole purpose of this is to segregate out the education bill budget as a separate budget, so that we can, because I think that the House and the Senate can agree on the adequacy and the immediate needs of education, and then can go forward, because I don't think that we've had the big disagreements on the education portion of the budget, but what always gets tied up is what are the add-ons and what are the other pieces that are put into that puzzle. And so this segregates those out, gets rid of the capital, gets rid of other operating considerations, and just comes back to education of our kids. And setting that budget aside as a separate item, I think we can get agreement on it. I think we can get it early.
Maybe when we get some public testimony, we can hear something from the school districts concerning their preparedness to have a budget ready early. Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I do want to make a comment, too, about, you know, municipalities, many of them, their fiscal year ends June 30th. And so if we ask the schools to not give the municipalities their budget to a later date yet, it makes a difference, because they want to know what the school budget is so that they can plan their budgets. So we can't step it backwards very far at all, and we're pushing up against their deadlines, the municipalities. And so I really like this bill, and I think it'll make a big difference for our schools in the long run. It'll just take a little while to get the transition and to get it in place, but I think it's something that schools have wanted for a long time, really.
Representative Gatto.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. It's really important to remember that schools, just like mom and pop's grocery store, are subject to the same laws of supply and demand. And the supply of teachers is relatively low right now, and the demand is relatively high. And so think what we do, we have to be able and willing to make some adjustments to see to it that teachers who are in demand in other states don't simply say, I can't wait, because I need certainty in my ability to get employment. So it's our job to make sure that we make an environment for teachers that says simply that I know, you know, my job is here. I've got my job. And so that's why I think Representative Seaton has a bill like this, is we need to accommodate the teachers and kind of shy away a little bit from saying we don't have to do that. We have all these other difficulties we have. So I do appreciate you sponsoring a bill that simply makes it better and for our schools to retain the teachers that they need to retain.
Do we have any more questions for Representative Seaton?
Are we going to have somebody else follow up, Eddie?
Yes, we will. Thank you, Representative. We're glad to join us if you'd like.
Okay, thank you.
Now we will take testimony for or against this legislation. When you come forward, please state your name for the record. First, I'd like to invite the administration to talk to us on this a little bit. Eddie Jeans.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Eddie Jeans. I'm the Director of School Finance for the Department of Education and Early Development. Mr. Chairman, on House Bill 20, the department is supportive of the concept of early funding. We would make a couple recommendations, and that would be to move the March 15th date that the legislature has to act back, maybe March 1st, maybe March 5th, somewhere around there. And that way you don't have to deal with the 10-year law provision under 142140A. The other thing I'd like to point out about this piece of legislation is in on page 1, line 9, it says that the legislature, that the governor submit to the legislature a separate appropriation bill limited to appropriations to carry out 1417. 1417 is the foundation program, and so having that language limited would limit our ability to include pupil transportation, schools for the handicapped, and the other K-12 components that Representative Seaton spoke about. So I don't have a recommended amendment for that section, but I think that word limited does limit our ability to submit a bill beyond just the foundation program.
I would first like to ask Mr. Jeans if you could maybe submit in writing to the committee some of the suggestions that you had put forth there so we can study those a little bit.
Mr. Chairman, I'd be happy to do that. And with that, Mr. Chairman, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Any questions from the committee? Representative Salmon. Thomas.
Spank, spank. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm just reading on the second page here. It's, you know, it's the teacher has required tenure rights to be laid off under so-and-so. Makes it sound pretty easy, and I've been through a school district that laid off teachers, and it was a much more rigorous program in here. Is there any language that you refer to, or is that the AS 1420-177? Is that the language that lays off teachers, tenure teachers? I mean, this sounds like you just write them a letter, say you're laid off for the year, when, you know, at least in our school district, we were spanked pretty well.
Through the chair, Representative Thomas. You're correct in this provision refers to 1420-177, which is another section of statute that deals with reductions in workforce. And there are two criteria that the district has, one or the other, that the district would have to meet in to be eligible to lay off tenured teachers. And that would be if the school, if the attendance in the school has decreased, or if basic need in the school district has decreased by 3% or more over the previous year. So the way the statute's laid out is, if you think you're going to have less funding through the appropriation mechanism or fewer students, you must notify tenured teachers by March 15th of the potential that they'll be laid off. In terms of non-tenured teachers, you have till the end of the school year to provide them with notice. But I think Representative Seaton hit it right on the head. Job fairs start in March. If you issue a tenure or a notice of non-retention, then you have staff that are out looking for other jobs. You may not be able to get them back, and they may be very desirable people that you're losing. So I think that answers your question.
Yep. Just a comment is, most people reading this may not understand what that piece of language does as it goes through the process, and somehow maybe in the, whether it's in the sponsor statement or somewhere, it may point out that that's the layoff process. I mean, unless you've been involved in the layoff process before, one would know what that language meant. Just a comment.
Good. Any other questions from the committee for Mr. Jeans? Thank you, Mr. Jeans.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
We now invite public testimony, starting with those online around the state. First, we have Mr. Dan Beck in Delta Junction.
Morning, Mr. Chairman. My name is Dan Beck, and I'm superintendent of schools for the Delta Greeley School District. I'd like to support HB 20 for a couple different reasons. The first, we're probably in a little different position than most of the school districts around the state. We don't intend to lay off teachers this year since we're growing so rapidly. But we need to know what our budget is to be able to go out to job fairs to fill those positions. And the requirements for highly qualified teachers even put more pressure on us to get out as early as possible, find the best teachers. The second issue dealing with early funding is how we put together our budgets. We have to start with our projections in our EAAs somewhere around the first part of January, putting the budget together. Even though that budget is not passed in a final state by the board until June, we have to have it in a state close enough where we can go out to hire in March. And since personnel makes up most of the budget, it's critical to have that information early. I think that Eddie Jeans had a really good point on moving the date in this bill back to March 1st, and we just support the bill in totality. We were in the position a couple years ago where we did lay off tenured teachers under the new reduction in force, and it's difficult, it's time-consuming. I wouldn't wish that on anybody else in the state.
Thank you. Is that all, Mr. Beck?
Yes, it is.
Okay. I'd also like to remind folks around the state testifying that we would like your name for the record and any group that you may represent. At this time, we'd like to go to Kenai.
Yes, this is Margaret Gilman from the Kenai Peninsula Borough School District. I'm a member of the school board, and I wanted to express my support for Representative Seaton's HB 20. As a school board member, I would very much appreciate the idea that the funding would be known before the hiring decisions have to be made. I think it's important to remember that what we have here is in the current situation, the current funding, is just a tremendous level of uncertainty in the spring of the year, which should be a fantastic time in schools, but instead teachers are fearful of perhaps losing their jobs. The message gets out that programs are going to have to be cut. Parents and students are affected. They're concerned about, just again, what I said, the uncertainty in the environment. It's important to remember that we are in a competitive educational environment. There are many private school and other school choices out there, and districts do need to compete for children. So when we have the message out that we're going to be cutting programs and cutting teachers because we're not able to be sure of what our budget is until the end of May, that adds to that level of uncertainty. What I would like to suggest that perhaps a solution and perhaps an amendment to this bill is the idea that really in February of 2005, we should be planning for the 2006-2007 school year as opposed to the 2005-2006. We should know in February 2005 what our budget and what our exact staffing will be for this upcoming school year. What I would suggest is that we need to look at funding for 2 years out. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Mrs. Gilman. Ms. Gilman.
Yes.
Melody Douglas, are you out there?
Yes, sir. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Melody Douglas, and I'm the Chief Financial Officer for the Kenai Peninsula Borough School District. And I want to thank Representative Chenault, Seaton, and Wilson for sponsoring this bill. I think it's important that we look at such matters. I would just like to note for the record that the Kenai Peninsula Borough School District Board of Education has adopted a legislative priority in this in support of this type of action. I would like to echo some of the comments already made here today. One is that we would support the department's recommendation on moving the date forward to March 1st and leaving the notification date for hiring or for notifying our teachers at the date that it is now, I believe, March 16th. And the reason for that is that the earlier we know these matters, the better. It is very disruptive in school districts when we have to go through these processes. And it does affect children in the classroom when we have a number of our staff worried about what's happening. The other thing is moving the date out farther, I think, might hinder our hiring processes. We need to really know what our hiring needs are. As Mr. Jeans indicated, job fairs are starting in March, and they run clear through April and May. And if we're in the position of notifying our hard-to-fill positions, primarily in the SPED area, very often, in fact, Kenai School District has encountered this. We've lost that staff because they're so highly sought after. We just need to stabilize education, and knowing what's happening from a funding standpoint earlier on, I think, would be beneficial for everyone, although I would have to support Mrs. Gilman's recommendation on 2 years out funding. Truly, if we really want to settle down education, we should be dealing with, we should know what we're doing for our 06 budget right now, and we should be talking about 07, but I imagine that conversation will occur at a later point. But I would also like to echo Mr. Jeans's recommendation that the this bill should be change to reflect all K-12 education programs. We need to know what's happening in pupil transportation, boarding home, youth in detention. All those programs are important to the planning processes from a budgetary standpoint. So I thank you for the opportunity to comment and encourage support of the concepts put forth in HB 20.
Thank you, Ms. Douglas. Anybody else in Kenai like to testify today?
We have no one else at this time, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Thank you. I would also like to remind folks and at the local LIOs that we do have some time restraints to try and hold your comments to, you know, just several minutes here. Right now we'll go to the Matt Sue. I believe we have Ann Kilkenny.
Thank you. My name is Ann Kilkenny, A-N-N-E-K-I-L-K-E-N-N-Y. I don't represent a school district, a union, teachers, or any organization, though I am very active in the school system as a volunteer. I totally agree with all the reasons that have been given for early funding. It would do a lot, as has been said, to reduce anxiety and uncertainty, to help districts properly budget, and to make the whole system more efficient. I very much appreciate this debate having been generated by this bill. All the reasons given are excellent. All the reasons for early funding are that have been mentioned, I think, have good merit. But I have not heard one single reason for why this should be put into law. Last year, the House did exactly what you're proposing to do. You had your funding bill passed by March 1st. And there's no reason why you can't continue to do that and why early funding can't be done by March 1st without law. I'm kind of conservative, and I don't think we should be codifying things that don't need to be codified. We're all in this together. I think that school budgets need to be taken into consideration. It looked at the whole picture, funding for transportation, funding for other health and social services programs. Better solutions are to perhaps start your session a week earlier so that it's over a week sooner. Another solution would be to accept Agaria's recommendation to change budget due dates on a local basis. I think if you decide that you want to adopt this bill or pass this bill, that it should be amended to add transportation and bond debt reimbursement programs and all the other corollary and education funding issues. I do not agree with the suggestion to budget 2 years out. In the Massachusetts School District, we are seeing such tremendous growth, and there is so much volatility in both state revenue and in student enrollments. I don't think that we could accurately budget and do the best by our people by stretching it out 2 years in advance. Thank you for giving me this opportunity to speak with you.
Thank you, Ms. Kilkenny. Is there anybody else in the Matsu that would like to testify today?
No.
Okay. I believe that's all we have in all our local Alaska or regional Alaska. Anybody in our audience today would like to testify on this? Okay. Hearing none, seeing.
There's somebody.
Oh, we do have somebody.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. For the record, I'm Bruce Johnson with the Association of Alaska School Boards. Our association, interestingly enough, does not have a position or a resolution on this particular concept. We've had one in the past. We let go of it by the majority of our membership vote because we always felt that we were better off at the end of the session to be there at the table when that final known pot of money was being divided up. And so I urge you, as you think about this bill and the ramifications, we certainly agree with Representative Seaton that it would do many things in terms of stabilizing our teaching force and assuring people that they have positions and so forth. And in no way would we want to in any way discredit this. But given the volatility, even of oil prices right now, even though they're high, you know, the projections, you know, one day are $180 million one way and then $30 million the next couple weeks later in another direction. So we do have a lot of volatility. And I think first and foremost, from an association standpoint, that adequacy is really what we're after as an association. We'll be working on this issue with our membership at the fly-in on the 13th and 14th and urging districts to weigh in on this issue in a way that makes sense for them personally in their own circumstances. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson. Do you have a question, Mr.
Yeah.
Gatto?
Thank you, Mr. Gatto. Thanks, Mr. Chair. In your opinion, do you think we're trading one problem for another? Because education funding is tied to our budget. Our budget's tied pretty much to the price of oil, and the price of oil is unpredictable early on, certainly. And is that something, and I think that addresses what your concern was, that if you're at the table when we know the price of oil and we know the amount of money in the budget, you feel more comfortable being here later in the session arguing over funding issues. Is that correct?
Through the chair, Representative Gatto, I think education has been well served during times of scarcity, being at the table at the very end. When you think back to the last 12 or 13 years when education has been held at a flat funding level, sometimes there were reductions projected, and at the 11th hour we were able as a education community to make a difference. So it is a trade-off, there's no question. We can benefit both ways in education, from early funding so that we keep our teachers, as well as being at the table when all of those projections are known.
At all? Thank you, Mr. Johnson. Anybody else in the audience? Okay. Please come forward.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is John Alcantara. I'm Government Relations Director for NEA Alaska, representing about 12,500 public school employees throughout Alaska. I would like to applaud Representative Seaton, Chenault, and Wilson so far, and think that the forward funding concept is a great idea. We just had our delegate assembly where we have 400 elected delegates at the Hilton this weekend setting policy for the year, and they passed a resolution for adequate and forward funding of education. I think the suggestions made by the administration and Eddie Jean suggesting the March 1st, March 5th date and leaving the tenure date at March 16th were a good one that I hope they will be considered. That obviously affects tenured teachers. We hope never to get to that point where we're districts having to lay off tenured teachers. That would be, they'd have to get through 1,000 teachers in Anchorage, for instance, to get to that point. But that's caused by issues that can't be addressed through this bill, and the incredible turnover of public school employees has a lot to do with things that were already mentioned by several representatives this morning. So thank you very much for hearing this bill. I think it's an important concept. We've had resolutions of support in the past. I know you have a letter that addresses two of the sections, and from President Bjork of NEA Alaska, and the only exception we had was the changing of the date from March 16th to March 25th. So other than that, I applaud House Bill 20 and thank Representative Seaton and the other co-sponsors for moving this forward. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Chair.
We have a question here for Mr. Alcantara from Representative Guerra.
Thanks for the chair. Mr. Alcantara, let me just make sure I understand this correct. The resolution is for early and adequate funding. So does that mean there's a resolution that supports a standalone early funding bill like this, or does that mean that you've got a caveat that says we only support early funding if we can also get adequate funding? Just tell me let me understand what your statement of support is.
Through the chair, Representative Guerra, exactly the latter of what you said. We only support early funding if it is indeed adequate. And we believe, as we believed through the good work done last year at the $82 million, that there is certainly room in this budget for FY06 and in future budgets to adequately fund K-12 public education, as well as fund it early so districts know what they're going to get, and you will not see these articles in the newspaper about if we get the governor's money, we'll get only $10 million in reductions for Anchorage, $600,000 for Juneau, $1.7 million for Fairbanks, et cetera. We think the two can go hand in hand. I certainly expect that they will, and I think this is another year where legislators will put K-12 education the number one issue as it is in poll after poll across the state.
Mr. Chair, just a follow-up.
Please, Mr. Guerra, or Representative Guerra, follow-up.
Thank you. I mean, I think you answered the question, but I just want to make sure you answer the question. So does NEA say we should support this bill, or does NEA say we shouldn't support this bill until we also get a guarantee of adequate funding? I mean, this is a standalone bill, right? Yeah. So let me just...
Okay. through the chair, Representative Guerra, we do support the bill. And the letter that's in your packet dated a couple of days before Delegate Assembly, I think verifies the support of early funding. I mean, we have every reason to believe that early and adequate will be coupled and go hand in hand. And indeed, that's what legislative item 0547 suggests, is that lobby ways to ensure adequate and forward funding of education. And I do believe they can go hand in hand.
Okay. Any further questions? Thank you, Mr. Alcantara.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
We have Kathy Wasserman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Kathy Wasserman. I'm the policy coordinator for the Alaska Municipal League. And we have identified forward education funding as one of our priorities for this year. So we stand behind House Bill 20, and we're in full support of it. I think there's some trickle-down effects that some people don't realize that are inhibit municipalities from going forward when there is not forward funding on education. Many small communities have make their revenues from rentals to teachers, and if they can't identify how many teachers will be in their community and who will be gone and who will be there, it impacts the municipality's budgets as well and how they can plan. And further, I think if it were to be put to a date of June 1st, it would be very difficult for school boards and municipal councils to come together and get something done by July 1st. It would be basically impossible if there were any issues that had to be taken back to both of those boards and councils. So we are in full support of House Bill 20, and I thank you for your time.
Thank you, Ms. Wasserman. Any questions from the committee? Thank you. And we have one more.
Thank you, and good morning and good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and members of the House Special Committee on Education. My name is Cindy Spaniers, and I am with APEA AFT, the Alaska Public Employees Association and American Federation of Teachers. Among other bargaining groups in state service, city, borough governments, and with the University of Alaska, we represent employees within the Anchorage, Valdez, Juneau, and Petersburg school districts. Their professions ranges from paraprofessionals to maintenance workers, school nurses to school librarians, teachers and special education providers, and the administrative personnel. But I'm also here on behalf of my seven-year-old son and his second grade classmates at the Off Bay Elementary School. I would like to begin by thanking House Bill 20 sponsor, Representative Seaton, and members of this committee for making education a priority. Last year, several of you who served on this committee took responsibility for securing one of the biggest increases in educational funding in many, many years. During the course of those discussions, you also realized the quandary local school districts and the local governments face when establishing their budgets and meeting their obligations in a timely fashion. I appreciate any efforts you can do to help school districts become adequately and fully funded and early enough to make solid plans for the forthcoming school year. House Bill 20 is a step in the right direction. Again, thank you so much for your efforts to help provide the best education to our children last year and again for this coming year. Thank you.
Thank you. Also, I'd like to ask anybody, if you do have written testimony, you can provide copies to our office for the record, and we will make sure that they're submitted to everybody in the committee. Okay, we missed anybody? Thank you. Thank you, Mrs. Spaniers. Ms. Spaniers. Do we have anybody else left to testify on this? If you hear no further comments, we will be holding this for further hearing. We'll now take up HB 13. With Representative Gatto being here today, if you'd like to come talk to us about that.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, committee members. I really enjoy HB 13 because the sponsor statement is one of the briefest I've ever written,
couple of sentences only. It deals with school debt reimbursement. In the past, I will tell you that in my own district, we built Colony High School, Colony Middle School, about 13 years ago. At that time, school debt reimbursement was 90-10, with the state putting up 90 and the local district finding 10%. And we built two quality schools that stand today doing very well. Since then, the state has reduced its the amount of money it would supply for reimbursement on school construction. And it stands today at a 70-30 split. We did have legislation in effect which expired on January 1st of this year. And so as we sit here today, there is no school debt reimbursement. Now, in particular, in the Matsu Borough, it's fairly well known that we're growing at a rate of about 500 students each year. This requires us to build an entirely new school to house 500 students each year. And so it's fairly important for my district to be able to find a source of revenue for us to be able to build a school. I'm sure that same situation may exist in other places. So what this bill does, it simply takes the previous statutes and which sunsetted on January 1st of this year and extends the sunset date. And as we can see, it expired January 1, 05, and it extends it to July 1 of 06. This gives the borough time to put on to the voters bonding legislation, and if they agree to the bonding, then they could submit to the state for school construction. My partner here, Representative Gruenberg, you have something to add?
Not much. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, for hearing this bill so quickly. As I've talked to a few of you about this, and some of you I haven't had a chance to talk to yet, but this is intended to be a train, and this is something that frankly will benefit our part of the state. But we certainly, and I know I'm speaking for you too, would like to invite you to add things that would benefit your educational capital construction on this train. We need to deal something with, we need to do this year in Anchorage and in the Matsu and other parts of the state too. It's very important. We have a number of projects that are partially funded, and one of the schools that I'm familiar with, the kids are going to school with a roof that leaks and serious problems, health problems, and real people are at risk. And this, I think, is one of the most important issues facing the municipality at this point.
Thank you, Representative Gruenberg. And for the record, I'd like to show that he has joined us, and he's more than welcome to join us at the front table.
Okay.
Any questions for Representative Salmon?
I have a question on this bill. How does that affect the rural school districts?
It is a vehicle that you can utilize if you wish to.
Could you restate that again?
Yes. This is something we need in our part of the state, and we can work with you to try to get something that will benefit your part of the state. The last time this was done, there was a contingent effective date clause put on the bill. It was a 2002, I believe, act, and the act number was in special session. The bill number was 2003. You may recall that, Representative Wilson, and none of the rest of us were here in that particular special session. But do you have a copy of that? We will make available to you the language that was used in that bill. And the way it was drafted was, it was a large bill, as I recall. And the provision that was at issue here, the amendment, had tied to it a contingent effective date that said this language extending the 60 to 70% school debt reimbursement would become effective if and only if the voters approved a bond issue that contained bonding for rural schools. Do you follow me? Okay. So in other words, this would not become effective unless two things happened. Number one, the legislature passed the other provision. That actually may have been in the same bill. I don't know. All right, okay. And secondly, that other provision authorized bonds to be put to the voters at the next general election. And it would only become effective if the voters approved those bonds. So it tied the two together, even though they couldn't do it in the same bill, the other one being contingent upon bonding for the rural schools. So we can work with you and people from all parts of the state to craft a plan that will be a win-win for everybody, particularly in this year of high oil prices. This is a good way to spend some of this money to help the kids all over the state.
Thank you. A little bit deeper on that one is just, could you explain just maybe a little bit more into exactly how we would be funding schools? If you're an unorganized borough, how are they going to organize to get their part of the debt bond reimbursement?
And I'm not an expert, and Representative Wilson, I think, knows more about this than I probably. But as I understand it, to get a school in not only in the unorganized borough, but in the smaller municipalities that don't have the bonding capacity, what the state does is float the bonds, and the state pays the cost of repaying those bonds. In the areas that have the bonding capacity, the state pays a smaller percentage because the municipality has the ability to pay the rest. And it's very complicated, but it specifically depends upon the exact project. Some of these projects only get a 60% reimbursement, and others get a 70% reimbursement, depending upon whether they meet, as I recall, certain construction specifications. But the municipality has the ability to pay a partial match. But in the areas that don't, the state pays the full cost. Does that answer your question?
So they would have an election to propose this, but then they wouldn't pay their part?
They don't have the ability. And they never have.
Correct. That's what I'm trying to get at.
Yeah, that is correct. That's exactly right. And that's the only way they are able to get the schools, because they just don't have the ability to do it. But those particular schools are set up, I believe, in the legislation, and certainly in the bonding, so that people know when they vote on those bonds where they're funding and what they're funding. The voters know every project they're funding. It's full disclosure.
And how is funding for these schools appropriated now? A school that's built over Alaska through special appropriation?
In that case, it was done with bonding in the past when we had a lot more money. We paid cash for those schools.
Correct.
But lately, we haven't had that money. And so now we're going to bonding. And I think in some ways that's fairer, because what it does is it spreads the cost of those projects over time. And so as the generations that use those schools reach maturity, they bear part of the cost of repaying bonds. And that seems to me to be fair.
Questions from the committee? There was Representative Guerra.
Yeah, thank you. Let me follow up on Representative Salmon and Representative Newman's questions, because I mean, I'm supportive of this bill, but I think the point is that this is money that's going to come to our districts, and I think the answer is that no money is going to go to the districts of those who live in the unorganized boroughs. I'll let you address this, but here's my question and my understanding, and tell me where I'm wrong. Last year when we passed the bond bill, or 2 years ago, we said when the voters approve this, and then the money would go to our districts, they will also approve a part for money for schools in unorganized boroughs, and some money will also go to those districts. They will get full funding for the schools in their districts, and we'll get this bond package for our districts. That bond package has already been passed by the voters. It seems to me that if we pass this bill, what we'll do is we'll extend the date so that boroughs that have a local contribution, the organized boroughs, so they can participate in this program. It doesn't seem like it's going to add a penny for those who live in districts where there is no local contribution, because we can't, as part of this, isn't an additional bond package for the unorganized boroughs. So explain to me where I'm wrong.
What we'll have to do is make this part of a broader package of legislation. This is the start of the train. And I hope I'm speaking for both of us, invite... My testimony. I hope that other... districts, other areas in the state will participate and will meld a deal together.
Mr. Chair?
Follow up?
Yeah, just to follow up, and actually I got one other question, but just to follow up,
I mean, ask your question.
But we're just talking about this bill. My understanding is this bill, unless the rural districts are able to get together and somehow convince everybody else that they should also get some help with constructing their schools. If we just pass this bill and nobody's able to attach anything else to it, this is just a bill for the organized boroughs, correct?
That's correct.
Okay.
If I can comment, this is Representative Gatto speaking. We have a need. We have a need. What this bill does is help us to satisfy the need. The need is to get children in a school building. We are building portables right now that are substantial numbers to get us to this next school year. And building a school takes us out several years. That need is only going to intensify in these districts. And so whether or not you say, well, this does not cover other needs as well, it certainly does deal with an existing need that's easily identifiable. We have the numbers, we have the projections, and a simple walk through the borough would indicate that there's a lot of new houses, and they all have children in them. So it's simply a matter of extending a sunset date to existing legislation that we were already comfortable with, because it certainly did pass in the past. Had we set the sunset date an extra year and a half, we wouldn't be having this meeting. We wouldn't have this bill. We would have simply said that bill can simply still serve as a vehicle for building new schools. So whether or not, I mean, we do have Casile cases that are in front of us. We will be dealing with construction in rural districts anyway. It depends on how the courts rule. They've already ruled in Casile 1. I think we have Casile 2 now. Those are issues that we will face. This bill takes care of the immediate need, and I think we need to concentrate on that.
Just one final question.
One more follow-up.
Yep, and I don't disagree. I mean, that's why I support this bill. I think that we need to amplify the point that there are portions in the state that don't benefit from this bill. And hopefully they'll benefit somehow during the rest of the session. The other question I have is just on the mechanics of this bill. When the voters passed the bond package in 2000, the prior election, does this allow school districts unlimited bonding capacity, or is there a dollar cap in that they're allowed to bond against? Did we pass a certain amount that they can bond against, or could they come up with as many school projects as they could possibly fund?
Under this particular, thank you, Mr. Chair. Under this particular bill that's in front of you, there's no cap. The other projects. When the package of legislation passed, they knew the amount of the bonds and they knew how much was going to be bonded for all the projects. We're getting the section duplicated to pass out the contingent effective date. The reason I didn't suggest putting it into this bill at this point early on was because I didn't know who would want to do what.
Okay. Any further questions from the committee for these two gentlemen? Thank you. Thank you, Representative Gatto and Representative Gruenberg. Would you like to please join us, Mr. Groom, Representative Gruenberg? We'll now take testimony for or against this legislation. We're going to invite from the administration again the always informative Mr. Eddie Jeans.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, again, I'm Eddie Jeans, Director of School Finance for the Department of Education and Early Development. That was a lively discussion there, Mr. Chairman, and so I'd like to clear a couple things up for the committee. First of all, there was two bills that were passed in 2002, and one was a state GO bond package that had a list of schools of approximately $171 million that required a statewide vote of all Alaskans before the state would issue state GO bonds to pay for that $171 million in school construction throughout Alaska. Contingent upon an affirmative vote, which did occur, the debt reimbursement program was extended for a two-year period, no caps, that allowed reimbursement of 60 or 70%, depending on the individual project. If it met the Department of Education's eligibility criteria, it qualified for 70% reimbursement. If the district wanted to go beyond the department's eligibility criteria, the project was eligible for 60% reimbursement. The debt reimbursement program also required that you get those bonds approved by the local voters. So there was a two-step approval process there, one at the local level, one at the state of Alaska level. Once that approval occurred at both, then the local municipality can go and issue bonds for a minimum of 10 years, and the state will reimburse on the principal and interest of those bonds over the life of those bonds, subject to annual appropriation by the legislature. House Bill 2003 also required the Department of Education to prepare a report back to the legislature next January, not the one that just passed, but next January, on the effectiveness of this dual system, the GO bonds for the rural schools and the debt reimbursement program for the municipal school districts. Mr. Chairman, the department is opposed to this piece of legislation because we believe that we need to have time to do our analysis to give you good information in your decision-making process. I can tell you that through the last 2 years, the department and municipal governments have approved $728 million in construction projects in municipal school districts. So we need time to do our analysis to be able to tell you what the long-term fiscal impacts on the state will be for this program before we go in and extend it again. And the legislation actually foresaw us needing that time and provided us that time through the intent language to do this report. So with that, Mr. Chairman, I'd be happy to answer any questions you may have.
Yes, do you have any information regarding how this might affect any bonds that the state might be trying to move forward on otherwise? Is this going to have any impact at all?
If you're referring to the bond rating itself, Mr. Chairman, right. I would have to defer that to the Department of Revenue because okay. They're the experts in that area.
Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Eddie, I know that this when the governor looks at his budget and everything, he takes all that into account and he checks with revenue and sees what the state can, what we can afford to do in those various areas. Does anybody know if the Department of Revenue has been asked about where they stand on this?
Through the chair, Representative Wilson, I have not asked them.
Maybe we can submit that question to those folks. Okay. Any other questions for Mr. Jeans through the for the committee? Representative Bloomberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Jeans, I realize the necessity of doing the study and certainly support that. On the other hand, we have additional money now. We don't know what the situation will be, and that can all change from quarter to quarter. So the study you do then may not be valid a few months later, and we certainly do appear to have additional money to do this sort of thing now. Isn't there some timeliness to this?
Through the chair, Representative Grunberg, I understand what you're saying. The thing I want the committee to be very aware of is that the debt reimbursement program, we will be paying on these bonds anywhere from 10 to 20 years. So the debt reimbursement budget that you will see this year is $88 million. School districts have not issued all the bonds for the $728 million that have been authorized in the last 2 years. And quite frankly, I can't tell you what the state's annual obligation for those bonds is going to be until I have an opportunity to do this analysis. I can anticipate that it's going to exceed $100 million a year. For how long, I can't tell you just yet. I need time to do my analysis.
And I think we can also get together and pose a question to revenue on that, too, and get two different views from that. I think that would be appropriate. Representative Thomas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Question, Eddie. Do you know approximately how many schools need to be built out there or replaced? I know my community is, I think, going to replace three buildings and build one. I mean, they were built in the 50s. And so that's why I kind of support this idea here. There must be other communities that have needs. Do you know of, do they report to the department? Maybe, or they wish?
Through the chair, Representative Thomas, what we know is what districts submit to us for our CIP process, where we prioritize the state's needs based on those applications. We don't get applications from all school districts, though, so it's hard for me to sit here and tell you that the statewide need is X. We do have our school construction list, which has been prioritized for the legislature. We have our major maintenance list, which has been prioritized for your consideration. Quite frankly, 2 years ago, I would have never expected the debt reimbursement program to authorize over $700 million in projects. I quite frankly thought it was going to be more in the neighborhood of $500 million. But it's important to understand that the two proposals went together 2 years ago. And I think that's what the legislature has asked us to look at again, is how would we move forward with the two proposals tied together? How would we fund grant projects for REAAs at the same time we fund debt projects? And right now, this piece of legislation just extends the debt program two additional years. That's what it does.
Okay. We'll follow up, Representative Thomas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The reason I'd say the school district in Haines got behind is the lack of money from the state through the years of rebuilding their schools, remodeling them. They got to the point where they're deteriorated to the point where, and I might be wrong in the numbers, but they're within like $16 million to repair the schools, and it's like $16 million to build a new one. So they're at a point, you know, they might as well build a new one rather than put $16 million in schools that are 50-some years old. So I think at one place, the state's not doing their job, forcing the municipalities to do something else. So at least we're going to help pay 30% of the responsibility of the state, is the way I look at it, by allowing the communities to do the 70-30 if it goes forward.
And maybe we can get some information from the communities just exactly what they do need. I think that would be good for us to help decide on this. It's going to give us more information on just how deep this can go. Representative Salmon.
Yes, I have a question for Eddie. You said you needed more time to you know, check your analysis out. How much more time do you need?
Through the chair, Representative Salmon, the statute that was passed that 2 years ago requires the department to provide a report back to the legislature next January. So the department is simply asking for us to be provided that time to do our analysis and report back.
So, so you're asking until January to get this analysis done? And are you opposed to this bill?
Through the chair, Representative Salmon, we are opposed to this bill at this point in time. We would like to do our analysis, and the legislation requires us to have that completed and submitted next January.
Thank you.
Representative Gatto.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a clarification. You're opposed to the bill because you haven't done the analysis, or you're opposed to the bill, or even when you get the analysis done?
Through the chair, Representative Gatto, I can't say we're going to be opposed to it when we're done with the analysis. We want to do our analysis so we can make a good recommendation to this body on how to move forward to fund school construction in this state. To simply extend the debt reimbursement program for an additional 2 years without any caps is going to incur additional long-term liability on the state of Alaska, and we don't even know what the total impact is of the last 2 years that this program has been in place. So I need time to work with my staff and the municipalities to determine what that long-term impact and what the potential state liability is.
Any more questions for Mr. Jeans from the committee? Representative Guerra.
Let me just make sure I understand this completely. So in the for the school districts that can qualify for debt reimbursement, the prioritization of those schools basically is left up to the local communities, right? We assume that if a local community will pay 20 or 30%, that it must be an important project and we pay it. But there's no other state ranking for the local projects. It's once the local community decides to do it, as opposed to the projects that the state fully funds and those are ranked?
Through the chair, Representative Guerra, under the debt reimbursement program that just sunsetted, there was no ranking process at all. There were no caps in place. If you got local approval, you submitted the project to the department and we determined whether it was 70 or 60% reimbursement. So it was a wide open program. Through the grant program, you're correct. We prioritize projects based on need, and those projects are submitted to the governor and this body for consideration. One point of clarification, I know this is minor, but we don't provide 100% reimbursement for any school. Even the REAs have to make it a 2% contribution to their schools. So I realize it's not a lot, but I want to make sure that people understand REAs do support new construction at a level of at least 2%.
Okay. Representative Guerra, also Representative Seaton, if you'd like to join us up front for any questions, feel free. Representative Gruenberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just one question, Mr. Jeans. Is there any federal money for this, or likely to be?
Through the chair, these are state-funded programs, and so it's subject to annual state appropriation.
You're not aware of any federal?
No, I'm not.
Thank you.
Representative Thomas.
Thank you. Just, you made a comment about REAs contributing. How do they pay that 2% if there's no ability to tax the REAs? It's maybe more of a community thing, but how do they do that?
Through the chair, Representative Thomas, it's either through their state foundation aid or through their impact aid that they get, the federal impacts that are available to REAs.
Those are grants, aren't they?
That's your foundation operating funds.
Any other questions from the committee for Mr. Jeans? Thank you, Mr. Jeans.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
We'll go to public testimony on this from around the state. I believe we have someone, Matt Sue. Kim Floyd, are you out there?
I am, Representative Newman. Thank you. I would like to thank Representative Gatto and Gruenberg for starting this important conversation, and Representative Newman for scheduling this bill so quickly, as it is critical to our district. In the past 5 years alone, MATSU schools have averaged annual enrollment growth of between 450 to 500 students, and in our district, we build elementary schools for about 488 students, so we're looking at a new elementary school population each year. We're expecting 600 more students next year, so as Representative Gatto mentioned, bond debt reimbursement is essential to ensuring our students are educated in safe and effective learning environments. We've really had our challenges with rapid growth. It's placed significant strain on our existing facilities. Currently, all of our Palmer and Wasilla area elementary schools are crowded. There are no empty classrooms. We've tried to be creative, and we've tried to mitigate pressure from growth by installing 52 portable classrooms in this area. As a result, more than 13% of our total enrollment, or about 1,800 students, are taught in temporary facilities. We need 28 new portables next year just to deal with our projected enrollment growth. Our district does have a 20-year facility plan, and of course, we do participate in adopting an annual 6-year capital plan that we submit to the state. We've also been actively working with developers and major contractors in the borough to determine current and future school needs. Those industry professionals have indicated to us that we are on target, if not behind, with our facility plans. I understand the state's concern with total bond indebtedness. However, we have been extremely good stewards with our bonding projects. We haven't taken advantage or treated the program as if it's an open checkbook, and I truly hope that our conservative approach won't hurt us now when we need it most. Without schools, our community will be faced with solutions as drastic as double shifting our Palmer and Wasilla area elementary schools. For that reason, among others, we ask for full support from the legislature in extending this program. Again, we're not responsible for the growth, but we must respond, and we owe it to our children to do so. Thank you.
Thank you, Kim. It's good to hear from you. Also, Kim, could you maybe inform the committee here any steps that have been taken forward by the MATSU Borough, which is a borough you represent? Do you know of anything that MATSU Borough has done yet to move forward on any bills or any bonding on this?
Well, again, we've been very conservative, and we continue to approach it that way. Until we have some idea whether or not there will be some state support, I think it will be up to the borough to determine how they move forward in the event that we don't have support. Right now, we anticipate putting together a bond package for three elementary schools that, by all accounts, if they were to open next year, would be full. But whether or not that can go forward to our community without any state reimbursement is unknown.
Representative Gatto has a question for you, Kim.
Good afternoon, Kim. Good to hear from you. Just a question on the way the MATSU arranges for school construction. Can the assembly pass and put a bond package out for the voters that's simply contingent upon the state passing House Bill 13?
Anchorage has done that in the past, I know, so I believe it would be possible. However, I see that scenario very unlikely, considering that we are in, again, a very conservative area. So that's a conversation we would have to have with the assembly, but it's not been something that has been approached in the past.
Any other questions from the committee? Thank you, Kim.
Thank you.
Anybody else in MATSU? We now move to...
Yes, there is.
Okay. Please state your name and who you represent.
My name is Ann Kilkenny. I represent only myself, and I thank you for giving me a second opportunity to speak today. I live in MATSU. My son attends a middle school. One of the things that is being done to address overcrowding issues is that we're moving preschool children into middle schools to alleviate the overcrowding at elementary schools.
This bond debt reimbursement is absolutely critical for our area, and I try not to be a sky is falling person, but this is absolutely top of our list. As a parent, I want my child to be in a safe environment. I want him to be in a class of a reasonable number of children. I want him to have choices for classes. We can't reduce our class sizes, and we can't offer more classes because we don't have any classrooms. At Wasilla High School, we have teachers who have no classroom, we call them cart teachers. All their materials and supplies are on a cart, and they move from room to room every period, teaching in a room that's vacated for one period because the teacher that has that room is on their prep period. We have classes that are taught at 0 hour, classes a seventh period hour. We are doing everything we can to maximize the use of the facilities we have, but we need more space. We need to have new school construction. Those of you on the committee who are out in the bush, remember what it was like how alone you felt when you had needs and you didn't have votes. We in MAPSU have a greater need than anywhere else in the state. We don't have enough votes to do this without your support. Remember what it felt like to need the support of the rest of the community, and consider how you would feel if we were talking about the kids in your districts. This is for all kids. Thank you.
Is that it? Thank you. We're now going to go to Anchorage School District.
Mr. Chairman, committee members, my name is George Vakalis. I'm the assistant superintendent at the Anchorage School District, and I'm standing in on behalf of Ms. Como, the superintendent. We certainly support the reinstatement of this particular bill. There's many reasons for us to support that, and you've heard an awful lot of those reasons from Representative Mgato and others. But the bottom line is, if you just take a district the size of the Anchorage School District and you look at the number of facilities that the district has, approximately 92 schools and then 10 auxiliary facilities to make the district operate, it requires major maintenance because of the aging facilities that we have. And in order to do and to keep these schools up to proper standards, we basically have to do the major maintenance. And in order to do that, we have to bond for it. Also, we have schools that are in dire need of major renovation and or replacement. For example, Clark Middle School. That school needs to be replaced. It's actually cheaper to replace it than it is to go in and renovate it. But the bottom line is, in order to make all this happen, we need to have some type of debt reimbursement program on the books. Because quite frankly, as was just mentioned by the previous speaker and others, the voters aren't going to go for it if they have to pay the full amount themselves. It just isn't going to happen. Historically, the legislature has supported a debt reimbursement program for many, many years, and they've honored their commitments to the public in the debt reimbursement program. So what we're asking for is that this bill be reinstated at the 60% and/or 70% level to allow some flexibility for the districts to be able to not only get those schools that qualify, but there are other facilities that are school-related facilities that need work as well. And this would allow the flexibility for the districts, just like the previous bill did. That's the end of my comments.
Thank you, Mr. Vakalis. I believe now we're going to be going to Kenai LIO. Melody Douglas. Still with us, Melody? No? Okay. Do we have any other further comments? Anybody from the audience? Okay. No further comments. We will be holding this for a further hearing. Also, for the record, is the intent of this committee to reserve time for the school districts and school boards around the state to come before this committee next week and to speak on the issues of education funding. And this will end today's committee meeting. Stand adjourned.